Welcome to Sports Business Secrets. I'm your host, Kevin Tarka. This podcast is specifically designed to share secrets from experts in the sports business world to help you along your own path to success in this industry. Each episode is packed with lessons and insights that never expire. You'll hear from general managers of professional teams to CEOs of sports tech companies to agents, coaches, players, and everything in between. I invite you to join me in real time on my personal journey of representing players and coaches, traveling the world, and always finding a way to battle through obstacles in this competitive industry. Joe, welcome to Sports Business Secrets, my friend.
Thanks, brother. Thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.
This is another one that's been a long time in the making, and we've certainly come a long way from our days at Gazelle Group together. It's funny. I usually try to think of like a funny story, the way I met someone for the first time. And I know we had briefly known each other before the Gazelle Group days, but I just think of our flashbacks to working super hard when we were preparing for our events. And I always think of the day we were doing inventory or something. We were riding the little tricycle bikes all around in that back room. Hopefully Rick and Mike aren't listening to this, because we were definitely working hard for sure.
Yeah. Those are actually some of my favorite memories. The times at Gazelle when we weren't actually working. My first memory of our interactions was when I think it was like my second or third day on the job as an intern, and you came over to me. You're like, "Hey man, like, you had this box of video games, 2K video games. You're like, can you just sort these and make sure the labels are all facing the same way?" And I was like, "Are you serious, dude?" Like, sure.
I gave you that project, man.
Purposely took like a half an hour to sort like 20 video games.
Man, but I definitely gave you one to keep, though.
Oh, for sure. Whether you gave it to me or not, I definitely took one.
Oh, that's great. Good times. Well, for those who might not be familiar with Joe Moore, I'll give a quick little intro here, and then I'll give him the floor to give a little background. But Joe is a fellow Jersey guy who grew up not too far from where I did. He went to West Windsor Plainsboro North High School. He ended up playing collegiate lacrosse at Syracuse University. He played a few years professionally with the Rochester Rattlers and then transitioned into his career after sports. He's had experience in event management, like we just talked about at the Gazelle Group. And then he took a few other sales-oriented jobs in the sports industry before joining Center Court Sports Academy in 2018, I believe, where he's been climbing the ranks very quickly ever since. He is not just an expert in the sports landscape. He also happens to be a national champion, which we'll talk about later, a coach, a leader, and a great husband and father. This is your official welcome to the podcast. We've got a lot to chat about today, my friend.
Awesome, man. Like I said, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here and, you know, to be joined by you, somebody that, you know, I look up to and, you know, I'm, you know, positively inspired by everything you're doing and, you know, not just this podcast, but outside of this and, you know, just everything you do, you do it with passion. So thank you on behalf of the audience for everything you do.
Appreciate you, man. You give me too much credit. So, all right, I'll give you, I know I did a little brief background, but I'll give you the floor here. Why don't you share a little bit about your background growing up, getting into sports, maybe, you know, where you're from and what you want to be when you're growing up. And then we'll talk about the college life.
Yeah, for sure, man. So born and raised in Central Jersey, a small town called West Windsor. You know, sports for me have always been a part of my life, literally since I can remember. You know, whether it's just games on TV in the house, or if it's playing basketball with my brother or my dad in the front yard and in the driveway, picking up a lacrosse stick, whatever, man. Like, we never really had a go-to sport when I was a young kid. It was soccer, baseball, basketball. Like I said, always involved and just moving, you know. So since I can remember, I think, you know sports have been a staple in my life and you know, in my family. It's been what's kind of kept us tight over the years. I mean, just over the Thanksgiving break, we were, you know, rallied around the TV watching the NFL, watching basketball, just always on. So, you know, for me, like I said, sports have been a kind of staple for me. And as I've grown up and obviously on the playing field, it's been an inspiration in the lacrosse world. It's taken me to places that I never even imagined when I was a little kid. It's opened up doors that I never would have imagined even as an adult. Even today, it's sports is what gets me out of bed and keeps me motivated.
That's awesome. Multi-sport athlete for sure.
Multi-sport, yeah. I would say multi-sport, but really I would say basketball and lacrosse were kind of my go-tos. I would say actually, surprisingly, basketball is my first love. Lacrosse, I just happen to be a little bit better at. So, but basketball has been, man, like that. I've always loved playing basketball. I love, the fact that you can't hide on the basketball court. Everybody's a contributor. It's super fast pace and it's just fun. I find it very enjoyable, but I don't discriminate. All sports, man, whether it's watching, trying, playing. Golf is a new sport that I've started to pick up over the last few years and kind of fallen in love with that too. So I would like to say multi-sport athlete, but I use that term.
You're a competitor. Loosely. You're a competitor.
Competitor. That's a better way to put it.
But speaking of multi-sports, so obviously, you just talked about your love for basketball. We play pickup all the time. But lacrosse has kind of been your bread and butter in terms of, what brought you the farthest competitively. But did you have aspirations to be a pro lacrosse player growing up or maybe even earlier? Maybe, was your dream like many young basketball players to make the NBA? Or did you have other aspirations like during those middle school to high school years when you were like, oh, hey, I'm pretty good at this sport? Like, what was your mindset of like your top aspiration?
Sure. Yeah, I definitely NFL and NBA were like all my eggs were in those two baskets. I was like, I'm going to one of those two leagues, no questions asked, until I stumbled upon this sport called lacrosse. But I think I held on to that dream of playing in the NBA a little bit longer than I probably should have. But, for once I picked up a lacrosse stick and it just kind of came naturally to me to a certain extent, I think over time, my dreams and actual goals of playing at a really high level, whether it was collegiately or professionally, that really kind of came to the forefront. So, but lacrosse, man, like I think it was, sophomore year of high school, I switched positions, moved to the defensive side of the ball, and things just started to really click. I changed the stick that was in my hand. I went from a short stick to a long stick. And I think that just really literally physically balanced me out on the field. And I found a ton of success in that position. And I think that's when I really started to take the game seriously. And I think from there, from a goals perspective, my goal was to play Division I lacrosse. And then once I got a little bit long, and higher up in the ranks, my goal then became, see if I can go play professionally in some capacity. So, but I think in high school, that's when I really started to get serious about the sport and start to focus a lot more on it, on and off the field, honestly, and see how far I could go with it.
Right. And I'm always curious and fascinated, to be honest, with the recruiting process in many sports, right? Obviously I'm more familiar with the basketball recruiting process. And for myself, being a non-Division I recruit and being, like having choices between some local D3s, in the basketball world, when you're a high major recruit, it is a crazy lifestyle. And obviously when we were growing up, it was a little bit different than today. Today is just like, I can't even fathom some of the things that, the recruits get to see. But talk about your recruiting process. Because obviously Syracuse is a high major, big time school, big time winning culture, winning program. What was the process like for you and what ultimately made you choose Syracuse over some of the other schools that were recruiting you?
Yeah, it was a unique story, probably just like every other high school or collegiate athlete out there. Everybody has their own crazy story, but for me, it was, it really started, the sport started to click for me when I was a sophomore in high school, which is actually kind of late in the recruiting game, especially as you're looking towards the spring of your sophomore season. You really, if you don't crush it that year, you really only have 1 year left to get, actually recruited. So, so I was fortunate enough, I had a good sophomore season, a good junior season. The issue that made things tricky on my side were my grades. I just didn't value education at the level that I really should have been, especially as an aspiring collegiate athlete. At the time we had the clearinghouse. So there was a sliding scale where if you had a certain GPA, you had to have a certain SAT score. And if you hit below a certain mark, you couldn't play Division I sports or D2 sports, I don't think at the time. Mm-hmm. So for me, I was way off, way out of balance with the clearinghouse. So, whether I wanted to play Division I lacrosse or not, I was not eligible to. So, for me, I had to pivot in some capacity, to be able to take my game to the Division I level. And for me, the answer was to take a post-grad year. So I decided it was a really difficult decision for me, because all of my friends were going off to college, and whether they were playing sports or not, they were still going on to college. And for me, going on to a fifth year of high school to an all boys boarding school was a little different. Yeah, exactly. But I can say that once I got there on campus, I realized it was exactly what I needed. And my family and I always joke, it was my second chance in life. So, but from there, I think everything started to move pretty quickly. I was able to focus on the books like I needed to, got my GPA back up to where it needed to be. I became eligible to play Division I lacrosse and was actually recruited by a number of schools, one of which was Syracuse at my private school, Trinity Pauling. I think, for me, it was simple at the time. Looking back to, from a decision perspective, I wanted to win. I think like a lot of people out there, you want to win a championship. And, for me, looking at Syracuse, I think at the time they had 10 national championships, which is the most in any school in college across, at the Division I level. It was kind of a no brainer. If they came knocking, then I was going to open that door and do everything I could to get myself there. So for me, it was winning, but getting on campus and seeing the level of support in the classroom that the lacrosse program was able to provide, that was just kind of like the icing on the cake for me, that made it just the easiest decision, probably that I've ever made. So,
I think you chose a great one because of the competitive nature in winning, because it didn't take long for you to experience that winning process by winning just a casual national championship your freshman year, correct?
Correct. Yeah. So I was fortunate enough, but also kind of unfortunate enough to win my first year there. And I say unfortunate because the following three years,
the bar set,
nearly as sweet. So, yeah. So, but no, I can't take anything away from that experience of winning a national championship, man. It was, I learned, I think, so much. I think still, I also study that team that we had in 2009 all the time. And I think about it. And to me, it defined perfection. Not only did we win a national championship, but like I look at how we practiced, like the different pieces that we had that ultimately made our team, like it was like the perfect recipe, which ultimately, kind of led us to a national championship. But I get chills just thinking about it all the time. I have a picture in my house of when we scored our tying goal in the championship game. And when I look at that picture, man, it just, the memories flood back. But I was super fortunate to be a part of that team and make that run with those guys. It was amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's not every day we have actually, don't quote me here, but I'm pretty sure you're the first national champion I've had on the podcast. So I just want to double click on that real quick. So you said you studied the team and it was almost a perfect team, right? Like you guys had perfection. So what was it about the perfection? Was it team chemistry? Was it talent? Was it a combination? I mean, obviously, knowing the basketball lane a little bit more, usually it's either you have the top ranked guy or somebody that carries a load and a leader, or you just happen to have a Cinderella run, like a Sweet 16 appearance where 3-4 games in a row, this team just has the best chemistry and they literally study and scout the other team so perfectly that they're going to win as an underdog. Like, what was the combination for you guys? Why do you think you're able to have that success?
I think it was a combination of everything minus that one guy. Like our talent was incredibly high, but we didn't have any one guy who was like, that's our guy. And I think that actually helped us from a team perspective, we were stronger because we all had a role. You know, every guy on that 50, however many, you know, player roster had a responsibility that catered to our success or lack of success on the field. And I think everybody understood their role very clearly and followed through on it. You know, and I mean, you can't discredit the amount of talent that was in that program that year. I mean, we had arguably our sophomore class that year was arguably the best class in college lacrosse history. You know, they were just stacked. Like there was, I think seven of those guys were all Americans for, you know, three-time all Americans. So, you know, those guys contributing as sophomores, but then looking at our seniors who were just incredible leaders and built a culture that was just so positive. And, you know, I speak of that, you know, about this experience as a freshman, man. Like, and as a freshman, I felt like I had a real role and contributed to us winning a national championship. That looking back, that speaks to the leadership that was experienced in that program at that time, not just from our coaches, but from our seniors and our juniors, and even our sophomores. So I think when I look back, I think we had all these different pieces, and I think they all came together at the right time that you know, helped us kind of, you know, piece together a championship season. But you know, again, I think it's when you dumb it down, I think it was just a matter of understanding roles and holding each other accountable and following through on responsibilities at the end of the day.
Got it. Well, any aspiring collegiate lax players who want to win a national championship, there you go. You had a blueprint right there.
Yeah, easy.
So, imagine if it was that easy. All right. So let's, I mean, I'm sure we could do a masterclass all day and dive into, you know, your lacrosse career at Syracuse, but I want to kind of use this topic to transition to the next. And obviously lacrosse is a passion of yours, right? It's something that you lived and you breathed. But one of the topics I love to talk about on the podcast is how sports, you know, a lot, I talk about how basketball has opened doors for me. I know you even mentioned that before, how lacrosse and how sports has opened doors for you in your life outside of just playing. So I kind of want to use that topic to talk about how, you know, what that passion means to you. And I know you have passions outside of lacrosse as well, but, you know, that transition for you after college lacrosse, obviously, you know, I want you to maybe touch a little bit about your kind of pro experience, but at the time professional lacrosse wasn't as big and didn't have as many opportunities as it does now. So I really want to just dive into your mindset on how you use that passion of lacrosse to start to open doors for career opportunities. And really just explain to the audience how, you know, how there are career opportunities. Cause I think a lot of collegiate players in any sport, especially basketball, I talk about a lot, like, okay, I'm going to the NBA, NBA or bust, or I want to be a pro or bust. Well, that's great. And I encourage that, but you can use that sport as a passion to do other cool things in your life. So maybe take that kind of summary and talk a little bit about how you use that passion to relay it to other things in your life.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, the biggest hurdle and the first thing that I needed to internally get past was the fact that it was acceptable to start a career and pursue a career in sports without necessarily being on the playing field or the court. And I think for me, you know, again, graduating Syracuse, I look back at all, you know, a bunch of guys in my class going on to, you know, be lawyers, be doctors, but whatever, you know, they're pursuing these careers that have literally nothing to do with lacrosse or sports in general. And to me, it was like, well, shoot, like what am I doing? Like all I care about is lacrosse, you know, all I care about is sports, you know? So I think that was, for me, I had to, again, for internally, I had to get past or change my mindset of like, it's okay. You can find a career path in sports without participating on the playing field. So once I think I understood that and kind of broke down those walls and stopped trying to go be somebody that I wasn't, I think that's when opportunity started to open up. And I think what helped me become successful within the sports industry has been just my network, you know. And I when I talk to kids about recruiting and trying to decide which program they want to go play for, the first thing I tell them to do is do some research on that program's network and the support that you get or lack of support that you get as a senior transitioning into the quote unquote real world, from the alumni of that program. So, for me, I think I've been very fortunate to be a part of a network in the, Syracuse lacrosse world where, those guys, if you are having, issues, whether it's finding a job or if you are having an issue in your job or just want to talk to somebody about challenges that you're facing in life, like you have a long list of guys that you can call and they'll take your call and they'll do everything they can to support you. I think that's the kind of the cool thing about the lacrosse, community in general is that it's not necessarily just tied to the programs that you've played for. I feel like we all, to a certain extent, look out for each other and want the best for each other. So, I give a lot of credit to the lacrosse community and the people that I consider a part of my network that have certainly played pivotal roles in helping me get to where I am today and hopefully continuing to grow in my career. I think network is everything.
Yeah, it's huge, and I'm glad you said it. I mean, I think, I often say to try to and networking is great. But I think where a lot of guys get misled is they try to network when they need it after. And you are a very different person, identity-wise, simply label-wise, right or wrong, when you were Joe Moore, the collegiate athlete, or Joe Moore, the Syracuse alum, right? They're two different, not for better or for worse, they're just two different things. And so being a collegiate athlete, you can open more doors and have easier conversations than not. That's just the reality of it. And so tapping into the time that you are an athlete and using that is definitely great advice. And it was good to hear how you kind of battled through that adversity, because the reality is for all athletes, whether you stop playing after middle school or high school, or you stop playing after a pro, like that's your identity. That's your label. Like you're a hooper, you're a baller, you're a laxer, you're a student athlete, you're an athlete. What else are you? And so you kind of had the opportunity once you realize that to almost get the best of both worlds, where you're like, okay, let me realize this. Let me tap into what I can do as a professional outside the sport, but also, you had your chance to play pro lacrosse a little bit. So what was that experience like? Just real briefly, just being able to be a pro, maybe some common misconceptions about, hey, what are pro laxers really make? Are they, making millions of dollars, or like what you actually had to deal with as you transition to the next stage of your life?
Sure. Yeah. So I participated in the professional lacrosse league at the time, but I didn't, I was all at a very brief stint. So I was kind of in and out, and I played for the Rochester Rattlers, which kind of is known as, or at the time was known as, a program that welcomed a lot of Syracuse alums. So it's funny, the guy that I backed up in college for three of my 4 years at Syracuse actually went to Rochester, of course, and I was stuck behind him again. So I love that guy. I'm not going to say his name, but if he listens to this, he knows who he is, and he's one of those mentors that I look up to, and one of those guys who would take my call any day of the week. But I think it's that the league that I was a part of a team for no longer exists anymore. It's actually the professional team or professional league now is the PLL, whereas that was the MLL. So things have changed. I think the new professional league is amazing for the game. It's adding a ton of awareness around the game, and it's introducing a ton of youth pro players to the game, because they're outside of the season, they're going out and doing their part to grow the game, and especially newer communities that don't necessarily have the resources to get involved. So the league now is much different than it was when I was a part of it. Again, just being surrounded by some of the best athletes in the world is unique. It's a very special experience. And, I think when you put the word professional, in front of a sport, it's, you're automatically slimming down this category of people that, they have one, they have a passion, but they have the ability to do their sport and perform in their sport at the highest level every time they're on the field or that court. So, just being surrounded by those guys, watching how they approach every single game, every single practice, and the level of attention to detail. Again, like those are things that I carry with me, whether it's preparing to play on field or if it's, you know, applying it to, you know, my professional career off the field. So, you know, but it was a quick stint. It was a quick in and out for me, but nonetheless, it was an experience that, that for sure, you know, had a positive influence on everything that I do.
No doubt. I'm glad I asked you that, because that's just, I want to double down on it for those who are listening, whether you are hoping to play professional lacrosse or professional basketball. It's like, you know, the phrase that you'll hear me say over and over and over again on pretty much every episode is the ball stops bouncing. Eventually it might stop bouncing after you make millions of dollars, but it might stop bouncing after a couple of short stints in, you know, in the professional lacrosse league. And so, you know, while you're there, you have to start transitioning that mindset into your career, which, you know, I want to get into here shortly, because, you know, the meat and potatoes of this episode is educating people about what you do now. And, but before we get there, one topic I want to talk about is the whole passion thing versus the fascination thing. And I know you have, you talk a lot about your passions and lacrosse and, you know, playing pickup basketball, but I know you also have some fascinations, whether it's, you know, your love for horses, which I want to hear about, or your morning routine fascination. So first of all, what in your own definitions, like what is a passion and what is a fascination? Are they, could they be one and the same, or are they separate?
I think they're probably separate. For me, I think a passion is something that, you know, and this is my definition of passions, is it's something that is necessary in your everyday life in some capacity, you know. So, you know, my passions, whether it's lacrosse or it's running, or if it's something else, like it's something that whether I'm doing it or if I'm thinking about it, it's on my brain in some capacity every single day. It's something that I care about. It's basically a non-negotiable in my life. It's something that I need to tick. So, you know, that's typically how I would define passions. I think fascinations are a little bit different, just because like horses, I'm like, I've always been fascinated by horses. And I think, you know, they're so powerful. They're so, but at the same time, so elegant, you know, and, but they always seem like so calm in everything that they do. I you know, my family and I did a maternity shoot for my wife, who's giving birth literally any second right now. 2 weeks ago, we went to this farm and we did this photo shoot with these two horses. And it was like, honestly, the most fun I've had in, I don't even know how long, because we were taking these just candid pictures with these two gigantic animals that are just like right there, you know, that, you know, that they could knock you over and do some serious damage to you in a second, but you know, at the same time, they're just beautiful to look at. And I don't know, I've just always been so fascinated by horses, and you know, always been a big fan of horses. So
that's awesome.
And then on the other side, it's morning routines, man. And I think morning routines, you know, I consider them like a good icebreaker. If you meet somebody new, it's, hey, like, what's your morning routine? You know, so
that is a good icebreaker.
Yeah. You know, so I think I'm fascinated by morning routines, because you get a completely different answer from every single person that you ask. You know, and in my opinion, I think morning routines are, you know, it's what starts your day. It's what defines you on a daily basis. And it always interests me to hear different approaches and different perspectives on how people start their day, you know. So two completely different fascinations that I have, but two things that I think about pretty often for whatever reason.
No, I like it. I also think fascination is something that, you know, kind of gets your mind off of, let's say, work in quotes, or off, you know, just keeps you curious and really makes you ponder, right? Like, I mean, you know, I'm sure you could find a way that thinking about horses, how that can help you in your work life, but like, that's like a very different thought process.
Totally different. I've questions, and I think you're exactly right. You hit the nail on the head. I think defining fascinations to me is just endless questions, endless curiosity about that topic and that subject. So those are two subjects that I, you know, again, I get, like you said, if I need to, you know, zone off for a little bit, I'll think about horses for a little bit. And yeah, that would give awesome. me what I need.
So what's Joe Moore's morning routine?
So ironically, so as with a 1 year old at home and another one quickly coming, as you can imagine, it's very hard to find structure in the house, you know, whether it's because the baby's waking up when we're not expecting her to, or if, you know, if my wife is dealing with pregnancy stuff. So I've struggled to find consistency from a morning routine perspective over the last, I would say, 8 months. So every morning is completely different, which maybe defines my morning routine just as a different thing every morning. But I think prior to the chaos in the household, for me, I like to get up early, you know, around 6 a.m. and get my run in. I'm a daily runner, so I like to kind of get my brain right. A lot of people use the ice bath as their quote unquote hardest part of the day. For me, running is the hardest part of the day, and I like to get it done nice and early and set myself up for a positive approach to the rest of the day. So wake up, get the run in, eat some breakfast. I like to put together a daily checklist of things I like to do or need to do that day, whether it's professionally related or if it's personally related. I have two separate lists every single day. And I like to, make sure that I can check those items off at the end of the day. So, but once I've created that list, it's kind of go time from there. I do like to break up my day and have at least an hour of, whether it's lunch or if it's just a quick hour long vacation for my brain to keep me, settled and balanced. I do like to make sure that that's done at some point throughout the day. And, but I think it's, as far as a morning routine, I like to keep it tight as much as I can. Like I said, it's been a little bit rough over the last few months, but it'll probably continue to stay that way for the next few months ahead. But I think, like I said, I think that kind of defines my current routine. It's just every day is a little bit different.
Yeah. So. How do you have a certain distance you have to run every day, or is it just hey, get up and run?
So for me, I try to hit 100 miles a month, run 100 miles a month. So it's, I typically break it down four miles a day, Monday through Friday, and then I'll go for hopefully around a 6 mile run on the weekend, either Saturday or Sunday, and then take the other day off. So around 26 miles a week. Yeah, I need it. I need it.
That's epic. Do you track it? How do you track it? Do you keep track of every single run that you take?
Yeah. So I track every run. I just have an Apple Watch, so I just use the Nike running app. I track my runs. What I've come to realize is that I need to focus less on pace and more on just lengths. If I really want to be serious about running, and really what I've learned that the hard way just through injury, because I was really, a couple of years ago when I was really trying to hit certain mile marks and paces, I mean, my Achilles, my back, whatever, you name it, it was eventually a nagging injury that wouldn't go away. So I think once I got away from putting that pressure on myself of trying to hit in a certain pace, I actually started to enjoy the runs more, and they became more therapeutic and less taxing on my body. But now it's gotten to be a point where, those 4 miles, you average them out around 30 to 40 minutes, depending on the day. And in that 30 to 40 minutes, man, my brain is just like, it's going, but it's also like a controlled going. I'm thinking about things that I need to think about so that when I get back from that run, like I'm level headed, I'm clear, I'm ready to get everything done that I need to for that day.
That's epic, man. That's not a small amount of miles. I'm definitely not sharing my Nike Run app, whatever username with you, so you can make fun of how little I run.
No, man. If you know me, especially in the past year or so, if you're a friend or a family member, I've probably put pressure on you and started running in some capacity. And I tell everybody, forget about the pace. Like, who cares? Run, walk, for 2 miles. But I think consistency is key, and just continuing to chip away at goals that you set for yourself. And I'm telling you, man, like the physical, the mental, there's so many levels of advantages that you'll take away from running and just physical activity. So I'm a big, big, big fan of running these days.
Love it. Love it. I'll stick to my pickup with you. My pickup games. Yeah. All right. So let's transition a little bit here. We haven't even talked yet about what you're doing now. And obviously, I want to share your story and share with the audience kind of what you do now for a living, obviously, right? So educate the audience a little bit. So let's talk Center Court. Maybe first, can you just talk a little bit about what Center Court is, what you guys do, and then we'll get into some different projects and some more questions I have about your kind of day-to-day job aspects.
Absolutely. Yeah. So really difficult to answer that question for what center court is, because we do so many different things. I put it in the simplest form. We're a youth sports company. We're a sports company. We lead first with our center court branded programs, and second with our facilities. We have 8 facilities across the state, all of which are in New Jersey, spread out, strategically throughout North Jersey. We have a facility towards the shore in Marlboro. We have a facility a little bit further south in Lawrence, which is where I'm based out of. And in every single different facility, you have different capabilities. You have, baseball, boys across, girls across, soccer, tennis, field hockey, ninja, summer camp, birthday parties, holiday camp. So, like I said, there's a ton of different capabilities, and a lot of moving parts. But when you dumb it down, I would say we're a youth sports, we're a sports company that leads first with center court branded programs, second with our facilities. And I say that because we like to control our destiny. So when you look at all these different facilities that are popping up, a lot of them, they'll cater more towards a rental model, whereas we cater more to our center court branded programs. Whereas and then ultimately our facilities just become a resource or a home to our different programs that we own and operate. So. But we're a ever growing company. We put a lot of pride in our brand and our people. We care a lot about the youth and recreational programs, across the state, and we do everything that we can to support them, so that they ultimately come back and support us, when we need it. So, but I think in its simplest form, we're a sports company.
Nice. Yeah. Sports company.
Has a bunch of facilities.
No, that's awesome. And you've been there for, seven-ish years, at least. And so I know your role has changed. Like I said, you kind of climbed the ladder, if you will, pretty quickly. And now you're the chief strategy officer, which means you wear a lot of hats, basically. And you run things from a high level. But maybe talk a little bit about like some of your roles. I mean, starting with being like a lacrosse director into, being a GM of facility and some of your responsibilities, and maybe talk about it in a sense for educating the audience, like, hey, this is what I do on a day-to-day basis, to where, I always try and give the perspective of, for the youth, of like, hey, this, you could do this too. Like you could use your skill set now and your passion for lacrosse, let's say, and then do it for a living, like you talked about before. So maybe explain in that perspective on a little bit more about your day-to-day role.
Yeah, I mean, I'll start by saying that we, as a company, I think we look for entrepreneurial mindsets. Like we don't have a single position in our company where day one you get a handbook or a manual dropped on your desk and that says this is how you do it. We more so hire people that. Or work with people that, want to take an entrepreneurial approach to their position or their responsibilities in our company, and put their unique twist on what they and we are trying to accomplish. So for me, as I've kind of traveled throughout the company in these different roles, I started as a boys lacrosse director at our Lawrence location. Relatively quickly after that, I was presented with the opportunity to take on the general manager position of that facility, which was a brand new 110,000 square foot dome facility. So I managed that facility while also being the boys lacrosse director for a couple of years. Eventually was then promoted into managing director of our boys lacrosse business, overseeing all of our boys lacrosse activity across all 8 of our facilities company-wide. And then I sat in that position alongside the general manager position at Lawrence for a couple more years. And then in January of 2022, last year, I was promoted to the chief strategy officer, working primarily with our facilities division. So overseeing our facility staff from a strategic perspective. But, I think for anybody in our company that has seen success, it's more times than not, it's because they've used their network to creatively grow their business and find success in their responsibilities. So that's, we look for go-getters. We're always hiring. We're always looking for people that can contribute to our goals. But, we're always looking for just good people, I think that's hard to find nowadays. I think for me, I think one of the what's really helped me climb the ladder per se is that I wake up every day, man, with a prove yourself attitude. You know, it doesn't matter how much success I've had last week or yesterday or whatever. Yesterday doesn't matter. I think my boss would probably tell you this too. I wake up every day, a clean slate of, you know, how do I prove that I'm, you know, worth the position or the seat that I'm sitting in every single day. And I've taken that same approach to this company and this every job that I've sat in for the last 7 years that I've been with the company. So, you know, but that's what we're looking for. Company first, people that will buy into what we're trying to do and have a vision for how they're going to bring their responsibilities to life.
God, that line was great, man. I want to repeat it here. So wake up every day with a prove yourself attitude. And it seems so simple, but that's a life approach. Like I talk about it in relation to being a pro basketball player a lot. And you can use that for any pro athlete, right? It's like, I don't care that you went to Duke. I don't care that you went to Syracuse. I don't care that you won a national championship. If you're going to play at the next level, you start from zero and you have to prove yourself over, right? You just do. And so that analogy is for real life as well. Outside of being a pro athlete, it's like, okay, well, you know, you can go get $100,000 salary job after you prove yourself. You're not going to graduate and just automatically, well, some people will, but not everybody, right? But it's like, you know, you have to prove yourself. And that scoreboard starts at zero. So I just wanted to double down on that one. And also, so you talked about being a GM. And before we get to a question I have about your current role, you talk about being a GM. I think maybe for educational purposes, I talk about a GM role a lot from a basketball perspective or from a sports perspective, being a general manager. Obviously there's similarities, but being a GM, you know, of the lacrosse program or of a certain facility, can you talk a little bit about like what exactly that means? Because being the GM of the Los Angeles Lakers or, you know, Rochester Rattlers is a different role than being a GM of like a facility. So maybe can you talk a little bit about what that role means?
100%. I think, you know, when you look at our company, these different titles, you know, general manager is a very generic title, but it means something different completely in our company than it does to say another general manager position at a different facility. And I think that's because of our many different capabilities and moving parts. You know, I think in our company, a general manager to me means that you are responsible for the overall success of a facility or two facilities if you're managing more than one. So, but you're ultimately responsible for making sure, you know, first and foremost, that there is a positive culture at that facility. We talk a lot about culture in our company on the facility side. You know, making sure that the facility is state-of-the-art status, presentable. You know, if somebody walks into our facility, we want them to be wowed by the cleanliness, by the professionalism, by the person behind the desk, the, you know, TVs, you know, make sure the TVs are on and just making sure that people feel welcomed and feel like they're in an environment where they are guaranteed to improve from an athletic perspective. We've, you know, with every customer that we have, we are fortunate they trust us. They've given us money and they trust us to follow through on a service, whether that's on field or in the lobby. Like we need to buy into that trust and prove that they're in good hands from the second they get in our facility to the second that they leave. So all of that and more probably falls under the responsibility of a general manager, you know, budgeting, purchasing, payroll, having an eye on payroll, you know, creating new programs, new revenue streams at your facility. It's all, there's nothing that is not a responsibility of a general manager in our company.
Yeah, you need to wear many hats for sure.
For sure. And, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think that's also that kind of leads into the next question I have is as the chief strategy officer, you know, I think ultimately whether you're a general manager or you're a chief strategy officer, or even if you're a CEO, you know, you take a leadership position. So at the end of the day, sure, you're looking at the P&L and sure you're making sure you're crossing your T's and dotting your I's and making sure everything's handled properly. and obviously you're profitable, hopefully, but leadership is such a big role. And I know you have certain leadership tactics. I know you, you know, you lead in a certain way. So what's been your approach personally, and what type of leadership do you have at, you know, I guess in your position now, like what, how do you lead? How does Joe Moore lead?
Hands-on. That's kind of the first thing that comes to mind. I like to be very hands-on, and one of the reasons I take a hands-on approach is because I've been in several different positions in this company. So I know, you know, I have an idea of how things should be done, and how, you know, and I also keep in mind the mistakes that I've made. So, you know, I learn from every mistake and try not to make the same mistake more than once. So, but I think that experience that I have, naturally, you know, I can't waste that experience. So it's in my best interest and in the company's best interest for me to be very hands-on with the people that I work with our general managers, to make sure that they're not making the mistakes that I've made before, and making sure that I'm sharing the knowledges and the best practices that I've experienced over the years with them to help raise their efficiencies at their facility. So, but I think from a leadership perspective, man, I like to get my hands dirty, and you know, I hate the phrase that you know, I manage these people. I more so work with these people, you know, and I like to, you know, visit the facilities. I like to, you know, help and collaborate on new ideas. I mean, we just launched this new flag football business, at 5 of our 6 team sports facilities. And, I've been kind of on the forefront of that effort, working with our general managers to make sure that those programs run smoothly, as they get started over the next, you know, 3 to 4 weeks. So, but I think everything, whether it's literally physical facility management, or if it's, you know, running reports and analyzing those reports to understand them, to raise efficiencies, like I like to do that with the people that I'm working with rather than dictating. I hate to dictate, you know. So, and I think ultimately, selfishly, it that helps me be stronger too. I mean, it's I'm constantly gathering information when I'm getting my hands dirty and helping everybody, you know, with these different projects. So, but I think, yeah, I think the hands-on approach definitely defines me from a leadership perspective. You know, and I think it's something that I'll never move away from. And I think if you're hands-on, it means you care, and you're passionate about what you're doing.
No doubt. And I know you talk a lot about supporting versus dictating, and you just talked about a little bit there. It's if you put yourself in the shoes of being an employee, which we all were at some time, versus being a leader or being an employer, you know, you want to be supported, right? You want to be working for someone or with someone that, you know, that coaches you along versus tells you what to do. And I think that, you know, I can tell that's your leadership style. And I know you also talk a lot about like kindness, and that's one of your core principles. And so talk a little bit about that, because I think we all, you know, it's so easy to not be kind. Like, people make mistakes, we all go through it, and it's like it's easy to be like, you know, ridicule someone in a not kind way, and we forget. Like, I do it sometimes too. But how important is being kind in your leadership style?
Yeah, well, I think it goes back to culture. Yeah, I think it's if you lose a sense of kindness, whether it's working with people internally, or if it's probably more importantly working with your customers, I think it brings down your culture, and it's ultimately it's respect, you know. And I think for me, going back to my leadership style, like I said, I love the entrepreneurial approach, and you can only really buy into that if you're allowing your staff to have a voice, you know. So, but I think, you know, our company specifically, especially Q4 and transitioning into Q1, we're in an extremely fast-paced environment. There's, you know, a million different things going on. There's literally hundreds of different programs that we're servicing across our 8 different facilities. You know, and it's kind of easy to lose your head, just to put it in simple terms, and lose that sight of kindness as you're moving so fast. But I think that if you can maintain a level head and continue to give your staff, your people, a voice as you're working with them, they'll appreciate that, and in turn they'll work harder and buy even further into the different goals that we have and objectives that we have. So, but I think, you know, you hear the term "kill them with kindness" all the time, and I think it's so legit. I think you hear some of the biggest, you know, business leaders in the country talk about kindness today, you know, and I think it's just something that I really value, you know, and I try everything as fast and as chaotic as things are moving. I try not to lose sight of just simply being kind every single day to the people that I'm working with. And I expect, you know, the same in return on their end.
No doubt. Well, that leadership style definitely sounds like it inspires your coworkers and your employees. And talking about inspiration, I know you're, you know, inspiration for you is an important part of your leadership style. So I like to ask leaders what inspires them. Like for Joe Moore, like, you know, what inspires you, whether it's in the workplace, whether it's outside the workplace. I know you look up to certain leaders and certain leadership styles. So what's your inspiration?
I mean, I've from an inspiration perspective, for me, I try to always have certain people, like I'm inspired by people on to answer your question, but I have a very, you know, like a select few people that I kind of check in on, and, you know, just watch how they move, watch, you know, how they carry themselves and the decisions they're making, you know, to kind of like reach inspirations that I have, or, you know, Steph Curry and Kevin Hart, man, like those guys are crushing it in every sense of the word. And we talked about the podcast Smartless. You know, ironically, Steph Curry was just on Smartless last week on their Monday episode, and just like listening to him talk, you know, that dude has a million things going on, but, you know, for him to jump on that podcast for an hour, literally between games, he had back-to-back games that when he was on the podcast, and he's still so even keeled, so casual, so level-headed. And that, to me, like, just bringing it back, it inspires me, man. Like, cause you, it, like, I know for a fact Steph Curry has way more going on than I do, you know? So if he can balance his schedule to a point where he's able to stay even keeled and continue to do what he needs to do, then I know there's a way that I can too, you know? So, but, and I think on the other side is Kevin Hart, man. Like, it's the same thing. Like that guy's got a million things going on. And, you know, I think for him, it's like, I'm always inspired by the way he balances his schedule, you know, and he talks about it a lot. He gets up at like 4 a.m. and, you know, what he accomplishes between that 4 a.m. point to 9, 10 o'clock when he's going to bed is just insane on a daily basis. You know, it's consistency. So, you know, so again, I mean, those guys are human just like you and I are. So my opinion is if they can do it, then there's certainly a way that I can do it, you know, but bringing it a little bit closer for me and keeping it on the people topic, you know, I'm inspired by people that are in my inner circle too. People like yourself, like I said, at the beginning of the pod, man, like you just following your dreams and, you know, going after new ideas and approaching things head first. Like that's inspiring to me, you know, looking at my wife, like to bring it real, real close to home, like having two kids in less than a year, basically, like, that's inspiring to me, you know, and just watching how, you know, how she moves and not to mention she has a very demanding job, you know? So, you know, so I'm inspired by a lot of different people that inspire me in different ways. And I could go on, you know, I could go on a little bit, the list goes a little bit longer, but ultimately I kind of like watch people from afar and just kind of steal little things away from them that help kind of piece together, you know, who I am and the way I take my approach to every single day.
That's a great approach. I love that. I think, you know, whether you're starting a business or you're looking for mentors, you know, taking a piece of what somebody else does and incorporating that into your lifestyle is a life hack. Whether it's from 10 different people or from, you know, two different people or from 100, but then incorporating that into your, like your personal lifestyle, because you know, you can't be Steph Curry or Kevin Hart, but you can take a piece of what's made them successful and be, you know, a certain style of that person. So I love that. Well, man, we've gone all over a lot of topics here. I'm sure we could talk for hours and hours, but as we wrap up, I want to ask a few questions to close up here. So work related here for Center Court. Obviously, you guys are a youth sports company. You know, you're involved in the education and the programming of all sorts of sports. And youth sports is a huge topic right now in at least the United States, because things are changing quickly. There's so many different entertainment options. There's so many different sports options, and some sports are getting more expensive than others. And, you know, others you have to pay to, you know, to be at a high level, like the AAU circuit. So for you, where do you see, whether it's youth sports in general or Center Court being a piece of that, like, where do you see in 5 years your role and Center Court's role in that youth sports industry?
Yeah, I mean, I love that question. I think it's for the company, in 5 years is a lot of time, but I think my hope would be for us to be in a position where we are truly servicing the athlete, the youth athlete, from a holistic perspective. That means, you know, attacking the mental approach and making sure that we're making sure that our athletes, especially our club athletes who are a member of our club programs, have a balanced mindset and know how to approach a game day, or know how to balance their schedule and their work, you know, their school life balance, you know, helping them with that side of things. I think mental health with the youth is just increasingly important. I would love to see for us to get our hands, you know, in that category a little bit more. I would also like to see our company get more involved with the performance training side of things. And again, injury prevention is huge, you know, whether it's for older athletes or if it's at the youngest ages. I think it's, you know, we've got to take a stronger approach to making sure that our athletes are, have the resources to become the best version of themselves from an athletic perspective. And then, you know, outside of those two categories, my hope is that we continue to, you know, grow our facility portfolio and continue to expand on our sports offerings. Like I said, we just introduced flag football this year, hopefully next year. And for the next 5 years, we continue to add different sports to the portfolio to ultimately just help keep kids active, you know. And I think to bring it back to me, I think it's my hope is that I can remain in a position where I can influence the direction of the company in some capacity and help us continue to prioritize youth sports at a really, really high level and continue to give back to youth communities across the state and maybe even across the country eventually. So, my hope is that I remain in a position where I have a voice in the company and can continue to protect the future of youth sports.
Yeah, I mean, you're clearly a valuable asset in that company. And I just, while you were talking about expanding sports options, I was just thinking you might need to add some equestrian options there.
Yeah,
that might have to happen.
We got to get some horses in our facility.
That's amazing.
Next to our facilities.
Yeah, part of. And what about personally? I mean, obviously being involved in, you know, the growth of youth sports, but what about personally for you, whether, you know, it's 5, 10, 15 years down the line, what are some of your personal aspirations, you know, whether it is work related or whether it's, you know, outside of work for your own life?
Yeah, well, I think from a work perspective, my hope is that that I don't see my job as work. I think right now I'm so fortunate to not consider my job as work. I wake up and I'm excited. I'm jacked up and I'm excited about the challenges that I have ahead of me. You know, I know so many people and see so many people who they dread work on a daily basis, and I used to be that person. You know, so I really value the fact that that I'm passionate and I enjoy what I do. I think that's really, really important. You know, so my hope is that, you know, I'm you know, still in a position to enjoy what I do on a daily basis from a professional perspective. Outside of the professional realm, physically, I would love to continue to push my body to the limits. I would maybe throw an Ironman in that category. And
okay.
Insane to think about right now. But like I said, like I want to push my body to the limits and see what I can do, you know? Maybe an Ironman, maybe a marathon. I would love to run a marathon at some point. We'll see, but you know, and then, you know, personally, you know, I think just being the best version of myself, you know, having two daughters, maybe even more kids in the next 5 years, however many years, I want to make sure that I'm the best version of myself, and giving my wife and my kids the best, you know, the best life that they could possibly have. And, you know, with these girls, man, I'm already like in a trap where my daughter just gives me a look. She gets whatever she wants. So, and she's only one. So I want to be in a position to not have to say no to either of them, as they're growing up. And like I said, I think in the simplest form, just be the best version of myself in 5, 10, 15 years from now.
Those are great goals to have, man. Great way to put it. And you're well on your way. So, look, I appreciate you coming on the pod, man. Before I let you go, you have to take part in the sports business lightning round. So I just fired some questions at you, and you got to hit me with the first thing that comes to your mind.
Let's do it.
All right, here we go. What's your favorite color?
Red.
Do you prefer coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Pizza or pasta?
Pasta.
Would you rather be able to speak to all animals or speak four languages fluently?
Four languages fluently.
What's your favorite country outside the one you're in right now?
That's a very hard Canada, because it's the only one. I've been to Israel, and that was a great experience.
But there you go,
Israel.
Hey man, we got to get you traveling more. Let's set up some lax camps internationally. What is one of your biggest strengths?
Communication.
Who is one of the first people to really believe in you?
My club lacrosse coach, Chris Sanderson.
I know he had a big impact on a lot of Montgomery guys too. What is one of your biggest fears?
Failure, easily.
If you could have dinner and drinks with anyone in the world, dead or alive, who's one of the first people that come to mind?
Steph Curry.
And if you could turn back time and talk to 18-year-old Joe, what would you tell him real quick?
Follow your passion.
There it is. Boom. Crushed it. Love it, bro. I love it, bro. Well, this was a lot of fun, man. I appreciate you coming on. We'll make sure to put the links to everything below in the captions. And if you're listening and you want to reach out to Joe and, you know, have any questions about his career path or maybe even potentially join workforces there in the future, then, you know, I'll put his contact information as well. So appreciate you coming on, my brother.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me, and keep grinding, brother.
Appreciate you. Thanks again for listening, my friends. If you enjoyed the episode or if it brought you any value at all, it would mean the world to me if you could give it a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. If you share it on social media, make sure you tag me at Kevin Tarka. If there are any topics that you want me to dive into or any guests you'd love for me to have on the show, just shoot me a message and I will do my best to make it happen. Have an amazing day and hope to see you back here soon.